Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Warning, there will be tears because I'm sitting in Susie's beautiful house. Oh, and don't worry if I sound like I'm laughing. I often sound like I'm laughing when I cry. And it's one of those difficult things that people go, are you laughing? And you go, no. But I'm sitting here wrapped in one of Susie's shawls with some heart medicine tea because my mother has died. And even though I'm crying now, I am not grieving. I am in liminal space and I'm crying for many, many things, but not actually for my mother's death. And that's what we would like to talk about today, about the great and extraordinary complex relationship that you have with your mother.
Yeah. And the great and extraordinarily complex thing it is to be the daughter of a mother who you don't necessarily think to be wonderful or wish to emulate.
Yes, and in the world, especially the sort of Americanized world of mom
and apple pie.
Yes, it is difficult. And there have been many years where my mother, nothing that my mother passed on was her fault.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything she threw to me was a softer ball than her mother threw her, for which I am profoundly grateful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
However, she was my karmic choice. And she had huge lessons to teach me, and they were not necessarily pleasant ones.
No.
She died at 93. The last day was perfect. And the patterns around her death are magnificent. And I'm so grateful that I can look at it from this wider picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she died on the beginning of the Saturn return of my father's death. So that's a completed cycle. A Saturn return is a completed cycle and an end point. And it's a birth point as well. So it's the end of this and the start of that.
Yeah.
It's the repaying, it's the karma.
And is it 28 years?
28 right? to 30 years.
Right.
So it's 28 years since my father died, and it's 29 years, the end of the Saturn cycle of my marriage to my second husband, which is where I lost everything financially, materially.
Okay. Yes, this all makes perfect sense.
Yes, it does. And in a funny kind of way, okay, how could any of this have happened in any other way? But of course, over the 29 years, there have been times where I've been going, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Oh, so I'm going to come back to that. But is there anything you want to ask or talk about yourself?
Yeah, really want to ask, what makes a last day a perfect day? You've said that a couple of times since you've been here, that it was a really good day, it was a perfect day. And bearing in mind how over the years, this might be massive projection on my part, but I would venture to suggest there have been no perfect days with your mother for at least some significant time. What made this one so lovely?
Well, she got pneumonia. She was 93. She wanted to die. She's been talking about wanting to die for a long time. And I was the only person she could say that to who would go, I understand.
Right.
Which was paving the way. And you could sort of see that.
Mm.
Because I would never say, oh, don't say that. Or, oh, no, you're going to get well or whatever. I would say, so are you seeing anything?
Mm.
You know, how do you feel about death? What do you think is going to happen at your death? Anyway, she got pneumonia. She was grumbling away about having a throat infection in the home. And eventually there was just a phone call which said, she's in hospital, can you come? Mm-hmm. And I was in Devon, so I was a good 3 hours away. So it was call your brother and your brother goes. And I did exactly the same as I did. Sorry, this is a long story, but then we've got 30 minutes.
Mm.
I did exactly the same as I did with my father. My father had a heart attack on his way into surgery for open heart surgery.
Mm.
And my stepmother called and said, come, 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 come. And I didn't. I had breakfast and went and sat at the end of the garden and waited. Mm. Something just told me to do that. And then she called again and said, he's died. So the bishop was staying. It was seminary week. We'd had a more extraordinary week working with finding my power animal and things like that. So it was perfect that he was there because I was going, I don't want to go, I don't want to go. And he was saying, the nefesh is allowed to protest. The neshama knows it must go. The neshama is the soul. The nefesh is the animal soul. You know, the part of us that, I want this, I want that. You know, part of the ego.
Yeah.
So I knew not to go that day. I knew I needed to prepare. I knew I needed to have a good breakfast the next day. I knew I needed another night with the bishop, to be honest.
Yeah.
And with my lovely lion as well. So I set off on the Friday morning, and there was a massive smash on the A 35 minutes before I drove off on it, and there was a fender bender on the motorway, one car in front of me.
Oh, lordy.
So I was aware that my energy was, you know, so I was praying and invoking help to get me there safely. And I had Schrodinger's cell phone.
What on earth does that mean?
Schrodinger's cell phone is when your cell phone is safely tucked into your handbag underneath the passenger seat and it rings while you're on the motorway travelling to see if your mother is dead or alive.
Oh, God. Okay, yes.
Three times I had Schrodinger's cell phone, and it did make me laugh because I couldn't possibly find out whether the cat or the mother was alive or dead until the next service station. Yeah. So in that way, it kept me good and safe because I stopped at three service stations.
Oh, amazing.
And each time got out and walked around the car. And when I finally got to the hospital, I walked into her room and she looked up at me and she said, oh, darling, thank God you can help me die. Yeah. And that was such a greeting.
Yeah, that's actually deeply beautiful, isn't
it? Isn't it?
Yeah.
So I just sat and held her hand and she talked about how utterly loved she had felt, been felt by her neighbours and her friends during lockdown.
Aww.
And this for a woman who found it very hard to be loved.
Yeah.
And rejected love so much because of her own issues. And that was her main problem.
Mm.
That whatever love you offered her could not be good because she wasn't worthy of it. So it had to be projected back out as being not worthy and not acceptable.
Mm.
So on her birthday during lockdown last year, after they'd done the NHS clap, the whole street sang happy birthday to her.
Oh, how
and she'd
gorgeous.
Never felt so loved. And she was loved in her last years. She became a kind, helping woman. You know, she became her full herself, as in understanding the strokes you get from being kind.
Yeah.
I won't take it deeper than that, bless her, because she wasn't... On this life, she wasn't a deeply evolved soul, but she was open. And she also started talking to me about how she'd lost her faith.
Wow.
Or she was an organised Christian most of her life, though she couldn't handle my being an independent priest, who found it very hard. But she was coming around to it. And you can see that she was coming around to the stuff I was doing. I was getting to be more honest with her mm-hmm. about it. Because in the old days, I used to hide a lot of the wanky bollocks stuff because I didn't think she'd accept it, but as I got stronger, I realised I could speak my truth.
Mm-hmm.
Wanky bollocks phrase again. But anyway, so we talked about what God was actually probably like, you know, not and that how religions were human constructs. And I think that helped her. And she suddenly started talking about seeing shadows of people with dogs.
Mm.
And that was so special because she loved dogs.
Right.
And I said, well, they will be waiting for you, and one of those dogs will be Lucy. And
was
another
that her
will
dog?
Be Lottie. Yes. Yeah. You know, and then she said, there's this extraordinary great light behind you, like gorse bushes. It's like a gorse bush. And I don't know the significance of a gorse bush. I shall have to look it up. I'd like to think it was a golden aura, but no, it was a gorse bush.
Well, gorse bushes have golden auras, to be fair. So.
Fair enough. And she said she saw the beautiful oak tree. And my brother said he came for about half an hour at this lovely time as well. And he said, you told me yesterday you saw an oak tree. Oh, no, an apple orchard. And she said, yes, that they don't stay. They don't stay. And I said, that's because you're not quite ready yet. And anyway, she was talking about how much she'd loved us as babies and how we'd suckled at her breast.
Aww.
And how we were as babies. So she was right back in yeah. that part of genuine love, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
That was experienced by all. And I was fully prepared to spend the night there because I could tell it was within the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
But at about 5 o'clock, she just said, no, I want you to go now. I don't want you to see me die. Thank you, darling. Goodbye.
Wow. And then how long was it before she
died? It was the following morning. And I channeled what I did with my father, and I channeled my mother again, because the following morning, 8:30, I slept late because I'd slept very badly. I was staying at my brother's in Worcestershire, which was an hour's drive away. Mm. And I had, for the first time since I've had it, had my mobile phone live that night, because I don't have it by the bed. I don't have it switched on. But I knew that in this case the hospital would call. And they called at 8:30 and said, she's taken a concern for the worst, can you come? And I said, just so you know, it will be at least an hour. I cannot get to you for an hour and a half. And they said, okay. And my brother was just up in his PJs, and I told him. And he said, oh, well, I'll get dressed and we'll go. And I said, no, you sit down and have your breakfast. You have your normal breakfast. This is going to be a long day.
Yeah.
And he did. And he sat down his breakfast, and we missed her death by half an hour. The length of time it took for him
to eat breakfast, but she didn't want you to.
She didn't want us there.
Yeah.
No, she had said quite clearly.
Yeah. And apparently that's incredibly common.
Yes. Oh, when Henry was dying, the nurse said, "You have to go away. He won't die while you're here."
Yeah.
In fact, he did. He was like mother. He died very politely after breakfast, so nobody would be inconvenienced. But
oh, to be so noble.
I know. Terribly. Oh dear. Anyway. So Michael dropped me off, went to the car park, and I got to the hospital. And ironically, because I was in dog collar, because it's so useful in a hospital, I went to the door of her room, and it had a notice on saying, please respect my dignity and speak to a nurse before you come in. And I thought, very close or gone.
Mm.
And I went to the nurse's station and said, I'm Maggie, I'm Thelma's daughter. And they said, yes, go on in. But they forgot to tell me she died.
Oh,
which was fine for me, because they'd laid her out beautifully, and I just went in, and it was a palpable shock, because I thought they would have told me.
Yeah.
But there she was, gone, and totally gone. You know, gone.
Yeah, gone.
But I did the prayers that I know of, and I anointed her body, and I spoke lovingly to her, and I said, you know, go forth, good soul. And I rang the bishop immediately, because he went straight into all the wonderful esoteric rituals he knows to make quite sure a soul is through, and he did a requiem for her.
Ah, amazing.
It was crazy. That was so beautiful. Such a good man. And then I went out to meet my brother, who said, I know, she told me. And that was the first psychic experience that I know of that he's ever had, that his mother said, I'm going now, and told him to turn on a piece of music.
Wow, beautiful.
So he was fine. So that was beautiful, I think.
And was she a granny? Has your brother got kids?
Yes, and her two grandchildren. One of them saw her on the Thursday, and the other I phoned, and he spoke to her on the mobile phone on Friday.
Oh, how lovely.
And she also, the last thing that we did together was she said, you wrote to me, because I wrote to her every week.
Mm.
It was much easier than talking to her, and she showed everybody the letters, so I was writing to the whole community, and my brother had to read them twice. So they were, she was a great writer herself. I lost my train of thought. What was the question?
I don't know, but you were saying you wrote to her every week.
Yes.
Sorry, everybody. I think you're totally at liberty to lose your thread in a conversation such as this. So I'm very moved by the fact that you wrote to her every week. I know, hilariously, my own mother has apparently only in her entire life written something like 2 letters. I think my brother once had one, and I once had one.
Mm.
And yeah, sad to say that wasn't a good letter, but let's not go there. Did she write back? I mean, yes. Wrote to her, she wrote back every week.
Oh, yes.
That's so lovely.
Yes. I came to dread the letters sometimes, because there was nearly always a snippy bit in them, because she was very good at being snippy with me. And the problem was, she was a writer. She wrote non-stop. She wrote the most incredible holiday diaries. She wrote a diary in the home. Have you ever seen the Eddie Izzard sketch about Noah's Ark?
No.
There's this wonderful little bit in it about a squid on the ark, wondering what it's doing on the ark, because it should be in the water, really. And writing a diary, Noah's Ark diary, day 1, you know, using its own ink. Can't find Mrs. Noah, not enough towels. Sadly, my room is sadly wet. And a complaint there. And I was just so my mother. Because this diary that Michael picked up from the home to take into the hospital with her before she died, it was just, it was a basically Julia Cameron morning pages. You know, she just wrote whatever came into her head. So it was Michael hasn't phoned. Maggie hasn't phoned. Maggie phoned at last. Michael phoned at last. You know, and what she had for lunch and how the people couldn't get her breakfast right. So it was all small stuff, but she just wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. She wrote her funeral. So the first thing to say at her funeral is that, in line with one of Mother's favourite radio shows, there will be no repetition, deviation or hesitation during this.
And she wrote that?
She didn't write the hesitation, deviation or that. No, she wrote the funeral itself, all the hymns and everything. We are permitted to have some prayers as long as they're short and audible. Because, of course, she was never deaf. We mumbled.
Right, right. Obviously. Oh my goodness, that's hilarious. Yeah. And also, how extraordinary, really, given that she'd existed and pretty much partook of mainstream society.
Yes.
Mainstream society is extraordinarily death averse, as far as I can tell, and we don't like to look at it, talk about it, or plan for it.
No. No, absolutely. And she, every single item of hers of any value had a note on it as to where it was to go. And who was to have it, or who was to choose whether or not they had it. Those were very rare. Most of them were, you will have this.
Wow. That's amazing. And I mean, that's somebody who's really, really faced her own mortality.
Oh, absolutely.
No wonder she had such a good death.
Yes. I mean, I would have liked it, personally would have liked it to have been a bit swifter for her if she was very tired. But the last night, who knows what visions she saw? Who knows what reconciliation there was? And what was so lovely was, lots of the rest of the day she died was lovely too, because before she left, she took us on a tour of Birmingham because we had to go and tell some people. Michael was there with me. So we were in the car together, my brother and I, and that was lovely.
Mm.
And he was talking about, you know, this experience he'd had of her telling her that she'd died and asking me about the shadows and asking me about death and saying, this is your area.
Mm. And tell me again about the apple orchard. You mentioned earlier that the apple orchard has a really particular
for
significance.
For me it does, because they're on our Patreon page. Yes, please go to our Patreon page.
Yes, please support.
There's a free download for you called The Chapel of Liberation, which was channeled to my bishop by a lady called Frances, who was dead, from the book Testimony of Light. And some of you I know have read that book by Helen Greaves, which is, as far as we know, the most accurate existing chronicle of life after death. It's extraordinary. Anyway, Francis had channeled to David a meditation called the Chapel of Liberation, which is for the release of all souls, so that any soul that is earthbound can be found. So it's a free download. Please go and get it. Even if you don't give us a penny, it's there for free. Absolutely, because it's so important. I think every independent celebrant, every vicar should have this, because it's a meditation of how you go through and help to make sure souls go through. Because souls, especially nowadays, get lost.
Yes. And I was about to add, I haven't read it, but potentially something every shamanic practitioner should have also.
Yes.
Because psychopomp, in our word, is so important. And yes, because we do live in a culture where over many decades now we've been terrified of looking at, speaking about or planning for our death.
Yes.
Souls don't know where to go. They don't believe in heaven anymore half the time, but they're slightly alarmed that maybe hell might exist.
Exactly.
Which is hilarious.
And as we don't change that much after death, we think we're still in the world.
We think we're still in the world, and even the ones who know they're dead are too afraid to move from where they are in case they end up in hell.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is horrific. That's why I'm writing the Blue Panda books, because that's all about that. But anyway, the Chapel of Liberation, you start by going through a particularly special door, which you visualise, into an apple orchard.
Mm.
And it's a universal apple orchard because it's got apples for all seasons of the year. It's got the blossom and the apples and the windfalls.
Beautiful.
And the window, and you walk through that into the valley where the great cathedral is, which has the Chapel of Liberation on its side. you go into the chapel, and it's the most beautiful visual sensation of doves of the Holy Spirit and the great rose above you of the great mother, which drops white petals and then blood red petals as you make your petition for the person. And you place a lamp on the altar, and one of the great ones who does this work comes to fetch the altar, the lamp, and takes it away to find that soul. And the soul may be fine,
exquisite, yeah.
But they go to find out, and then you visit the chapel again. Of course, you can do that again 30 seconds later because there's no time there, but it's best to wait a day for your own sake. And you go back, and there are particular signs to show you that the soul is safe. And it's just the most beautiful meditation.
Yeah. It sounds exquisite. Yeah. Really, really lovely.
And of course, I'm not allowed to do that kind of thing as a priest. You don't do it for your family.
No.
Your colleagues do it.
Yeah, as a shamanic practitioner, you don't do it for your family.
No, absolutely not. Apart from anything else, they might recognise you and cling to you.
Yes. Yeah.
Which souls will do, because I think the best idea is you die. In the Terry Pratchett story, you go to a desert and death says you walk and you find what you find. But imagine if you're in this desert or this place, and somebody comes along that you recognise or sees you, you're going to clap latch on as fast as possible. And that's why so many of us do carry around a certain amount of...
Yeah. Absolutely.
Dead souls. I had a dear friend who carried her twin who died before birth for 60 years until we worked out what the hell was going on with her chronic fatigue.
Right, yeah.
Release the soul, she's better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Why the hell didn't I spot that one earlier, you know?
Well, things are only ready when they're ready, aren't they?
But anyway, if I may go on, basically we knew we had to start telling people. And my mother had two adopted daughters since I moved to Devon, because I prayed that she would have another daughter. She had one incredibly dear to her, Felicie Fell, and another, Renata, who was nearly as dear, but took my place a bit more, I think.
Complaints about of daughter.
Yes. Anyway, Fel was the first one we had to tell, really, even beyond the relatives, because she adored my mother and my mother adored her, because they had the perfect mother-daughter relationship without the background, without the holes in the aura. Fel's own mother had been a real sad challenge to her, so her relationship with mine was so healing. Anyway, we went to Fel's house and she wasn't there. Her husband told us she was doing the flower arrangements at St. Augustine's Church, which was where my mother met my father, married my father, and where both of us were christened.
Wow, that's proper history.
Isn't that proper history?
Yeah.
So there I was walking up the aisle at St. Augustine's. This was me back in vicar mode again, because my brother will always take the lead in legal and professional things, being a top-notch lawyer and all that. But this stuff, he was deferring to me the whole time, which was also incredibly healing for both of us. Because suddenly Maggie wasn't wanky bollocks. Maggie was the one who knew what was going on. Maggie was the one who said she'd got 48 hours. She'll either die at the end of that or turn. And she did. You know, so he's going, oh, she knows.
Yeah.
Which is very healing for our relationship. So we're walking up the aisle of St. Augustine's side by side, almost like a married couple, to Fel and the vicar, the female vicar. And I was able to just look straight to the vicar and say, may we have a moment, please? And she knew.
Yeah.
She just moved away. So there I was at the high altar with Fel, you know, able to hold my arms out to her and take her into my arms and then talk to her about how Michael and I had done the cleaning with my mother in that church as children, and talk to her about the candlesticks and where they used to be on the altar, and about the lovely candle snuffer that we used to use. And it was actually the most beautiful time. I mean, Fel was crying, but we were able to share memories with her. And now she's asking me for more memories so she can fill in more pictures about my mother. So that was lovely. And because we had to go that way round, we passed where we went to school as children.
Wow.
We passed the houses she lived in all the way through her life in Bert. It was a complete tour.
Back through her life.
Back through her life, so she could take one last look and go. And I was able to talk to Michael about how Lion's mother came to us when she died. We were in Andorra, and we had to turn around and come home because she died. But I saw, before we heard the news, we knew she was ill, and we'd been asked to turn around and start coming back anyway. I saw a woman who looked just like her on the side of the road holding a bunch of lilies of the valley out of season. And I said to Lion, oh, have you seen a woman with a bunch of lilies of the valley? And he said, that's mother's favourite flower. And of course she died.
Yeah, that's my mum's favourite flower too.
Yeah. And she travelled with us all the way back through France, saying, oh, look at that, oh, look at that, oh, look at that, from the back seat. funeral, which was a full requiem mass, she turned up dressed in white, and she was saying to me, "It's not like this at all, you know. It's not like this at all." I was going, "I know, love. I know. I know." "Well, they don't know. You must tell them." I was saying, "They're not ready." No. "But I do know. I know it's not like this at all." Yeah, so she was obviously earthbound for a while, but later we saw her through. And she wasn't unhappily earthbound. Most people earthbound aren't that unhappy.
No, that's been my experience as well. Yeah. Too many of them don't even know that they're dead. And the majority of them are perfectly content that they're there, but absolutely understand that they need to go somewhere else and that they will be happier and better off somewhere else.
But they need a nudge.
Well, also, they need directions. They need collecting, as it were.
Yeah. Well, the movie Ghost summed it up so perfectly when the Patrick Swayze hero was murdered. He realised almost immediately there was a threat to his wife and refused to go to the light. The light came for him and he turned away from it because he had something else to do on earth.
Yeah.
And at the end of the movie, the light comes for him and he goes. And it is like that. Yeah. If you haven't completed your business, you probably won't go.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you don't know you're not dead, you won't go.
Yeah.
And if you're afraid of what might be there, you won't go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be really interesting, her funeral, for many reasons, apart from the fact that it's the day after my dear friend Adam, of whom we've spoken often on this podcast, has open heart surgery.
Oh my goodness.
It's Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement.
The day he's having surgery or the next
day? The day after, the day of my mother's funeral.
Is Yom Kippur.
Yom Kippur. And my brother and I are taking the funeral. He asked if he could take it with me.
Wow.
I know.
And it'll be presumably in Birmingham.
It will be in Birmingham. And it was specific instructions, no church, only the crematorium. But we have booked it for a double session so that we can do a proper eulogy and people, the old folk, don't have to struggle to get in and out fast. And I learned something, which is when you phone a crematorium, they'll tell you when their next double slot is, but they won't let you book it if you're a vicar. No, you have to be a funeral director. You cannot book a crematorium unless you're a funeral director. That's wrong. That has to be changed.
That's mad. That means people have to go through the most expensive route to do a funeral.
Well, I chose the best funeral director on the planet because I said to her, "Please, can you go and book it now? Because it's the only double period in the time that is the slot that's available for the primary people to get to that funeral." Because I'd already researched that. And she said, "Yes, I will. And please understand that you do not have to place the funeral with us. I will do that for you now."
Ah, oh, bless her.
Yes. So she got the job.
Yeah, totally. Well, that's lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's also quite interesting telling people because they're assuming that I have the natural emotions of a daughter who adored her mother. So it's, "Oh my God, you must feel terrible." I'm in liminal space. I'm sad because she didn't have a happier life. I'm sad because we didn't have the relationship that we could have had perhaps if I'd had more nows. I don't know. But I am very, very glad she went the way she did, that there wasn't any reconciliation needed at the end, but love was expressed.
Yeah. Yeah, what could be
And
better?
I have that lovely memory of that woman holding my hand saying, "Thank God you've come, you can help me die."
Yeah.
And that actually means me the world, it means the world. Which may sound very odd to people who go, "Oh my God, I couldn't handle it if my mother died." The thing is, our mothers will die. Our fathers will die.
Definitely.
Possibly some of our children will die. Our friends will die. Our family will die. We have to get closer to it.
Yes. Well, and we will die.
We will die, yeah.
You know, let's not be the ones who are needing psychopomp. Because let's be the ones who've actually thought about where we're going, what might happen, what we might need to do, what we might need to put in place by way of somebody, if you're a Christian, somebody saying a requiem for you, or if you're, or you call it something else, don't you, the mini version, do you, or is it a requiem?
Oh, yes, it's a requiem. Yeah. But no, the Chapel of Liberation is basically the equivalent of a requiem.
Mm.
Yeah. And you don't need a requiem, it's just a formula that some people know and which will work. When you say a full requiem mass for somebody who considers themselves to be in hell after death because they are in mud, if you see what I mean, emotional mud, because they were in emotional mud in their life, probably, and they're still in the level. If you say a Requiem Mass, when you speak their name, they hear it, and the angels hear that name and go, look.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same as the chapel.
Right.
So good. They go, oh, somebody's calling my name, and the angel goes, gotcha.
And for those of the non-Christian persuasion who might be listening to the vicar and the witch discuss these things, then if you believe or feel or even half suspect that there are people who you knew or loved who are dead, then a shamanic practitioner who performs what's called psychopomp. So basically it's pretty much exactly that. You know, you go to meet your spirit allies. The shamanic practitioner goes to meet their spirit ally, and they go looking for the souls of those who need to go to the, in my language, the land of the ancestors.
Yes.
And they are taken there by a spirit who is able to go from this world
to the next, to the Charon, or
however you pronounce it.
Like Charon,
A
spirit that works between the two worlds, yes.
Indeed.
Across the river
Styx. Yes. Or, you know, I mean, it's just so completely clear to me that all of our stories, whether they're your stories, my stories, the stories of Charon and the River Styx, the stories of St. Michael, whoever, we're all talking about the same thing. We've just made the story in different ways with different characters, and it matters not. The people, we, our souls, need to get from here to there. And what the story is about where here is or where there is or how we get there matters not.
Mm.
What matters is that the journey be undertaken, yes, and that when we're dead, we don't stay here.
Yes.
Not as necessarily a physical location, but as a way of being.
Mm. We have more to do.
There's the next great adventure, whatever that is.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The next great adventure. And she's on it. I've got this dear friend, Deb Rowley, who's on Facebook, and she's brilliant at these things too. And I told her about Mum, and I said, David will take care of it, but it'd be lovely to hear your take on it. And she said, and she came back to me and said, oh, yes. I saw her go through the door.
Mm.
She actually also saw the process, which David was doing pretty much, which was amazing. And she said, I saw her, and she practically flounced, she said. She danced. She turned around as if to say, look, I'm here. And then she said, I sensed your father, which was lovely because they broke up a long time ago, come towards her with a strong masculine energy. And she said a couple of things. I've forgotten one of them, so it's probably not appropriate. But she said, I was hard to love. To my father.
Ah, wow.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know she's through safe. I know she's a darn sight happier. Yeah. Though her last years were happy.
Yeah.
She had so many lovely friends. And I'm going through the process of, oh, I don't have to phone her. Oh, I don't have to write for her. And I'm getting some regret, but I'm just actually feeling huge relief that difficult life for that woman is through, and she learnt some things. She was reconciled with my father. And, oh, yes, the glorious thing was I had got, looked through the CDs I've got in the car, because I've got an old-fashioned car play CDs, and still got my mother's car that plays cassettes, but that's another point. And I got Carly Simon, Bet Greatest Hits, and she has a song called Like a River, which is about the death of her mother. Do you know it?
I don't, but I love Carly Simon.
Yeah, oh, it's beautiful. She said, I'll wait no long for you, no more for you like a daughter. That part of our life together is over, but I will wait for you forever like a river. And there's more about it, you know, things like, you know, do you know any more about God? You know, have you reconciled with Dad? Does the rain still make you sad? Are you dancing with Thomas Jefferson on the face of the moon? And it's just a lovely song.
That sounds gorgeous.
It was just perfect to have it in the car for the way home.
I will check it out.
Yes, do that. Do that. And because the whole family was in liminal space, my sister-in-law, who's not been well, seriously not well, with not a medical bad diagnosis, and prognosis. And because we were all in liminal space, I was able to say to her, Helen, may I petition for a miracle for you? And she is very atheistic. I've never been in the space to say that.
Did she say yes?
She said, you do what you want. And I said, no, it doesn't work like that. You have to give me your permission. And there was a moment's silence. She said, you have my full permission.
Woohoo! That's amazing.
Oh, that's just wonderful. That wouldn't have happened without Mother's death, you know? Yeah. So in a way, if the miracle petition goes through, my mother's given her replacement life.
Yay.
Because Helen is now the matriarch of the family. It's the wife of the eldest son.
Yeah.
You know, and these things do work. They do follow on.
Wow. Amazing. Okay, I'm really chuffed for you because I know how much you care for her, and
yeah,
obviously your brother cares for her.
Indeed.
So, yeah.
And I had spoken to him about it. He said, please, can I give my permission because her life affects my life? And I said, I wish it were like that, but no, it's her free will. It's got to be her free will.
Yeah.
But I did tell him that she'd said yes, and he cried.
Aww. Lots of tears, and they seem like good tears.
They're all good tears.
Yeah.
So she might have been an absolute termagin, intractable, indomitable old bat. But thank you, Mum, because that going was magnificent.
Yeah.